There we go. Now it's recording. Okay, good. Baruch Hashem. So today we're going to learn a Rashi that is in Perek Yud Dalet. That's chapter 14. Pasuk Lamed Vav. Pasuk number 36. The parasha is Shlach. I find it so incredibly fascinating how the parashas, these four parashas, Bahaloscha, Shlach, Koirach, and Chukas, are always around, obviously at this time of the year, but they're around Gimel Tammuz, which is a time that we focus on the role of a Rebbe. And all four of these parashas have messages that are very important to understanding the role of the Rebbe, the Moshe of the generation, including this Rashi that we're going to learn today. So we know the story. The story of Shlach is a story which, unfortunately, not such a happy story. It's the story of the spies, and how Moshe sends the spies to check out the land of Israel, and they're supposed to come back, and they're supposed to tell everybody how to go about conquering the land. Unfortunately, they don't do that. They come back, and they make a decision that it's impossible to conquer the land, which was the wrong message. It's not what they were asked to do. They were asked to find out how, and instead they came back and said, if. So that was an unfortunate misstep on their part. And the Jewish people bought into it. And despite the protestations of Yehoshua and Kalev, the people were most upset about it. And Hashem says, that's it. Everybody's going to be punished. You don't want to go into the land. You don't believe that it's accessible. You won't go into the land. And they die out over the course of the 40 years in the desert as a direct result of this. The spies don't have that same planner. They don't have that same buffer zone of time. And they die immediately. So we're at the point now where there's a kind of a recap of exactly what had happened and the story that the spies are about to be punished. So that's Pasuk Lamed Vav. Look what it says. V'ho'anoshim asher shalach Moshe l'asur es ha'aretz. Those men who Moshe had sent to spy the land. V'yoshuvu. They returned. V'yalinu olav es kol ha'eda. And they caused the entire community to rebel against him, lahoitzi diba al haaretz, to bring out some kind of loshon hora, basically, some kind of negative speak about the land. Just to put it into context, we're going to also look at the next pasuk, even though the Rashi we're going to study is on this pasuk, but let's just look at the next pasuk. Vayomusu ha'anoshim moitzi'ei dibas ha'aretz ra'a. And they, those men who had said bad things about the land of Israel, they died. By magefo lifnei Hashem, through some kind of an epidemic, some kind of affliction from before Hashem. Okay, so let's have a look at what Rashi says. We're going to divide this Rashi into two parts. So we'll first learn the first part of Rashi and ask a few questions about it. Then we'll move to the second part of Rashi and ask some questions about that. Rashi says, Vayoshuvu vayalinu olav. They returned and they complained against him. So we have to immediately try to work out what is it that Rashi is worried about. So let's have a look at the first part of Rashi, because that will indicate to us what concerns Rashi, apparently. Says Rashi, when they returned from spying out the land, hirimu olav es kol ha'eda, they riled up the whole nation against him, bohitzoas diba, by bringing out expressions against the land, speaking negatively against the land. Oysam anoshim vayomusu. Those are the men who died. Seems a little bit unwieldy, this Rashi. Look what he says. When they came back, and they caused the people to rebel against Moshe, then they died. It's a little bit unwieldy. So we have to work out what's Rashi bothered by over here. Now the commentaries on Rashi tell us he's worried about this word vayoshuvu, because the word vayoshuvu could mean two things. It's possible on the one hand that the word vayoshuvu means that they came back as if they had gone somewhere else and then they came back, right? Now, if you say that it means they came back, either what you're doing is you are repeating what we already know. They went to the land of Israel. They came back from the land of Israel, and that's when they gave a bad report. That's one possibility. In that case, you're telling us something we already know. The other possibility is Vayoshuvu, after they complained and rebelled the first time, they came back to rebel again and complain again a second time. That's the possibility. So the Mefarshim and the commentaries on Rashi say that's what Rashi wants to clarify for us. Don't understand this word Vayoshuvu to mean they complained, then they went away, then they came back again to complain again. Don't see it that way. Rather, Vayoshuvu, this is a recap of information we already know, that after they came back from the land of Israel, that's when they complained. Okay, so that's how the commentaries explain it, which obviously raises a glaring question. If that's what Rashi believes that this pasuk is doing, then you have to ask, why is the pasuk doing it? If all it's telling us is information we already know, because we've already heard the story, and we've already seen them go, spy the land, come back, bring the fruits, report back, complain. We've seen it all happen. So why would the pasuk, why would the Torah feel a need to repeat information that we already know? And Rashi seems to be quite convinced that that's what it's doing. So the question is, why? Why is it doing that? Question number two, if this is true, then all Rashi is concerned about is that one word, Vayoshuvu. Does Vayoshuvu mean we're talking about when they originally came back from the land? Or does Vayoshuvu mean that they came back to cause trouble again? So the key word over here is Vayoshuvu. If that is the key word, surely that's the only word that Rashi should have used in his headline, because Rashi always tells us in the Dibur HaMaschil, in the headline of the Rashi, he tells us what it is that he wants to comment on. Why does he include the extra words, Vayolinu Olav, which appear not to be what he is commenting on? Next question. Why does Rashi add in over here, Hirimu Olav Es Kol Ha'eda? If Rashi's only he's only concerned with one thing. Does the word Vayoshuvu mean they came for a second round of complaints? Or does the word Vayoshuvu mean it's a reminder that when they came back from Israel, this is how they behaved? If that's all Rashi wants to explain, the word Vayoshuvu, then that's all he should have explained. Why does he also tell us, Hirimu Olav Es Kol Ha'eda, that they sort of worked up the whole nation to complain about Moshe? Again, we know that already. That's been told to us already. If your purpose over here is to just explain the word Vayoshuvu, it's already enough of a question for us why the Torah has to repeat the same information twice. Why then do you, Rashi, have to add to that and tell us the story again when we've just read the story very shortly? I mean, just a few verses ago. And likewise, why does Rashi have to add that Oisama Noshim Vayomusu, they are the people who died? The Torah is about to tell us that in the next pasuk. That's the next thing it's going to say, is that they are the ones who died. So why does he have to say anything about it? Okay, so far it would appear to us that although the commentaries tell us Rashi is only concerned with the word Vayoshuvu, it would appear that that raises a bunch of questions. The most glaring of which is, why on earth would the Torah repeat information that we already know? So four questions on the first half of Rashi. Now let's look at the second half of Rashi. Rashi continues. Kol hoitzo'as diba, any time that you see that expression, moitzi diba, vayoitziu diba, hoitziu diba, any time that you see that expression, l'shoin chinuch devarim, what it means is, instructing someone to say. That's what it means. Which means, he explains, Shemalkichim l'shoinom l'odom l'daber boy. That it means like you almost like force a person to speak. The expression malkichim is like you pry their tongue. You force a person to speak. And he brings a proof from Shir HaShirim where it says, Kemoi doivev sifsei yeshenim, that you cause the sleeping people to talk. Okay, that's the proof that he brings. Doivev, obviously related to the word diba. Ve'yeshna l'toiva, ve'yeshna l'ra'a. Ooh, this is interesting information. We did not know this when we first read the pasuk. Sometimes diba could be that you get somebody to speak positively. Sometimes diba could mean that you get somebody to speak negatively. Now, up until now, we thought that it's only negative, right? Because the context over here is hoitziu diba, they brought out bad information about the land. And here suddenly we're saying that it could be positive, it could be negative. That's a surprise to us. Lekach nemar kan. Therefore, it says over here. Now, over here is actually in the next pasuk, Moitzei dibas haaretz ra'ah, that they brought out the bad information about the land. Why does it have to say bad? Because it could be that diba could be positive. Why does it say it? Again, Rashi reiterates, because sheyesh diba shehi toiva. Because there is also the possibility of diba being positive. So what seems to bother Rashi in the second part of the Rashi is that in our pasuk it says, lo hoitzi diba, and in the next pasuk it says, moitzi'ei dibas ha'aretz ra'a. In our pasuk it only uses the expression to express diba, to speak in a particular way, very general, and in the next pasuk it specifies ra'ah, that they spoke badly. Now, we know that the way Rashi operates is that if an issue arises in the text, then Rashi will always tackle it when the issue arises. So when we read pasuk lamed vav, when we see the words lohoitzi diba, at that point in time, we just assume that lohoitzi diba means that they initiated bad talk about the land of Israel. We don't expect that there's another possibility. When we get to the next pasuk, suddenly we see that the Torah feels the need to qualify that dibas ha'aretz ra'a, that they spoke badly. That's where the issue arises. That's where Rashi should have spoken about it. That's where Rashi should have said, ooh, hang on a second, you're telling me there are two kinds of diba? How come it is that Rashi tackles the word diba in our pasuk when we don't yet know that it could possibly be qualified as bad or otherwise? You see the question? Okay, so normally Rashi only deals with an issue once you recognize that it is an issue. And at this point in the pasuk, diba is very generic and we don't recognize that there could be a problem with that. The problem will only be alerted to the problem in the next pasuk. Let's say for whatever reason it is that Rashi felt he had to tackle it in this pasuk, well, then that itself doesn't make sense. Because then Rashi should have made an independent commentary under the headline Diba, don't you think? Here is explaining the word Vayoshuvu. That's his focus over here. Vayoshuvu, that Vayoshuvu does not mean they came back to complain a second time. Vayoshuvu means that it's a recap. He's not explaining the word Diba. If Rashi needed to explain the meaning of the word Diba, then he should have made a second commentary on this pasuk under the headline Diba and explained it then. Also, Rashi seems to repeat himself because first he says, Yeshna l'toiva v'yeshna l'ra'a, that Diba could sometimes be positive and Diba could sometimes be negative. And then he brings the quotation from the next pasuk and then he says it again. Sheyesh diba shehi toiva, that there is diba which is good. Why do you need to repeat yourself? You've already told us that. You've already told us. Sometimes diba is good and sometimes diba is bad. So all in all, we have seven questions on this Rashi. The first question is the way Rashi is interpreting the word vayoshuvu. The Torah is repeating information that we already know, which raises the question, why would the Torah repeat information we already know? The second question is, surely the key word over here is vayoshuvu, because that's what Rashi wants to explain, so that should be the headline. The third question is, why does Rashi remind us inside his commentary that the spies got the Jews upset at Moshe? We know that already. Question number four, why does Rashi have to tell us the spies were the ones who died? Well, that's obvious, it's going to be stated in the next pasuk. Question number five, why does Rashi tackle the issue of Diba in this pasuk, where actually we'll only see that there's an issue with it in the next pasuk? Question number six, why does Rashi merge two apparently unrelated issues into one Rashi commentary? He should have spoken about Vayoshuvu in one Rashi and Diba in a separate Rashi. And finally, why does Rashi repeat the message that sometimes Diba could be positive? You've said it, we heard it, we understand it, you don't have to tell us again. So actually, when you start to look at this Rashi commentary, straight away, as we've already noticed, there's a very big question that comes to light. And the very big question is, Why is the Torah repeating information that we already know? We know the story of the spies. We've just read it. We've just read the story of the spies. We know that they're the rabble-rousers. We know that they upset the people. We know that they got the people to complain against Moshe. We know all of that. Why do you have to repeat it? This is a major question. Besides the specific questions about Rashi, this is a major question about the entire text. There's another major question about the entire text. The other major question is, hang on a second, who did the spies have an issue with? You look at what happens when they come back and they say, Lo nuchal alois, we're not able to go into this land and conquer these people. Why? Ki chazok hu mimenu. Because they are more powerful than us. And the Gemara famously says that mimenu actually means than him. They made a terrible statement at that point in time, a huge rejection of Hashem's power. They said that these people are stronger than Hashem. Even Hashem can't get his own, so to speak, vessels out of that country. So who was the rebellion directed against? What was Hashem so upset about? Right? Hashem says, these are people that have spoken against me. He says it very clearly. What did they do wrong? They rejected Hashem. They questioned Hashem's ability. They questioned Hashem's promise. This was a rebellion against Hashem. Now, what happens over here in this pasuk? What does it say? Let's read this pasuk again, just to see the context. V'ho'anoshim asher sholach Moshe. The people that Moshe sent. Lasur sa'aretz, to spy the land. V'yashuvu v'yalinu olav. Olav. Who's olav in this pasuk? Moshe. They rebelled against Moshe. That's a big issue. How come suddenly as the Torah shifted the issue from being a rebellion against Hashem to becoming a rebellion against Moshe? And that's, by the way, a double question, because when they complained against Moshe, the Torah tells us very clearly that they complained against Moshe and Aaron. Here, Aaron is totally excluded. Vayalinu are love. They complained against Moshe. So the question is, why Moshe more than Aaron? And the bigger question, the double-edged part of this question, the bigger question is, why is the rebellion against Moshe such a big deal that we even overlook the fact they rebelled against Hashem? We're about to hear that the spies died. Surely we should contextualize that and say, well, that's because they rebelled against Hashem. The Torah seems to overlook that. The Torah seems to ignore the Hashem factor and now suddenly highlight the Moshe factor. This is bizarre. Any person who doesn't find this incredibly strange isn't paying attention to the text. So once you have that context and you appreciate that this pasuk is suddenly talking about a rebellion against Moshe, although that's a huge question and it makes us wonder what on earth is going on over here, actually at the same time, it's the first step to understanding what is going on over here. The minute we talk about Moshe and the rebellion against Moshe, and the next thing we talk about is that the spies die, Rashi has a big question. Big question. See, what happened? When the spies came back and they reported badly and negatively about the land of Israel, they were not the only people who started to complain. Everybody started to complain. And the whole nation began to cry. And again, the Gemara famously tells us that Hashem said to the Jewish people, you're crying now for no reason. This will become Bechia L'Doros. This will become an annual night that people cry. It was the eve of Tisha B'Av. It's going to become an annual event. But besides that, Hashem at this point in time, after the Jews, there's this groundswell of rejection and we should have gone back to Egypt. And why did you bring us here? And it's just going to be a dead end. And it's after all of that, Hashem is ready to eliminate, God forbid, the Jewish people. And Moshe has to intercede. In fact, if you turn back, you'll see, Moshe goes and he says, what does he say to them? What does he say to Hashem? The whole negotiation, what are the Egyptians going to say? And, you know, and he uses the 13 attributes of mercy, like every power that he has in his arsenal to protect the Jewish people, that they should not die right then and there. Because as far as Hashem is concerned, he is ready to absolutely wipe them out. If you have a look, he says, Hashem says, I'm going to wipe them out and turn you, Moshe, personally into the father of a great nation. And Moshe says, how can you do that? The Egyptians are going to say that you took them out and you killed them in the desert and you don't have the ability to take the Jews into the land. And then he says, Yigdal no koyach Hashem. Hashem's power should be great. And a whole thing. And he succeeds. He's able to save the Jews, that instead of dying at that point in time, it gets mitigated over a 40-year period, which means that everybody gets to live till the age of 60. That means there were people at that point in time who were 20 years old who were going to die at the age of 20. They got another 40 years of life, and not just any life. 40 years of eating the man and godly revelation and miracles happening all around them and experiencing teaching of Torah directly from Moshe. They had 40 amazing years of life. That's how powerful Moshe is. That's how powerful his prayer is. That's how powerful his defense of the Jewish people is. And that's what bothers Rashi. If Moshe is so effective, if Moshe is so capable that he could turn around Hashem's perspective from absolute anger to total forgiveness, then why did the spies die? The spies didn't wait 40 years to die. The spies died, if you read it, according to Pshat, then and there. And in fact, that's how most of the Mefarshim understand it, that they died that same day. So what's bothering Rashi is the two psukim next to each other, Lamed Vav and Lamed Zayin. Why? Because Lamed Vav tells us that these are the people, the spies, who said bad things against the land, and therefore in Lamed Zayin they died. Rashi wants to know, why did they die? Why could Moshe not rescue them? Why could he not protect them? Why could he not engage at that point in time as he did on behalf of the rest of the Jewish people and save them? Says Rashi, you got to pay attention to the words of the Pasuk. The key word over here is not just Vayoshuvu. The key words over here are Vayoshuvu Vayalinu Olav. That's the key. You want to understand what's going on at this particular part of the story? That's what's going on. The fact that in addition to the Jews rebelling against Hashem, critical information for this part of the story is that they rebelled against Moshe. That's why Rashi includes the words Vayalinu Olav in his interpretation. And that's why in the wording that he uses, he repeats and reminds us, Hirimu Olav Eskol Ha'edah. That they didn't only complain against Hashem, they caused the Jews to complain against Moshe. Now, you have to distinguish over here. The Jews didn't have an issue with Moshe per se. They had an issue with their own lives. They bought the story of the spies, hook, line, and sinker. And so therefore, they were afraid of what was going to happen to them. They were afraid, God forbid, that they were going to die. And that was obviously a very frightening, overwhelming thing for them. And that's why they cried and they complained. But their intention was not malicious against Moshe. Their intention was self-preservation. These guys, Hirimu Olav Eskol Ha'edah, they had malicious intention. They wanted to attack Moshe. They wanted to spur the nation into a rebellion against Moshe. If that's what they did, then Moshe can no longer help them. See, Rashi's, as he always does, Rashi's happy to rely on information that we have studied previously. Even though you may not have that information top of mind, but he's happy that we could know things that we've studied previously and apply them over here. On more than one occasion, Rashi has already proven to us that there's a principle in Torah called Ein Kategor Na'ase Sanegor, that if something has been part of the prosecution, it can no longer be used as part of the defense. So, for example, the Kohen Gadol cannot wear gold when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, because gold is kategor, it's part of the biggest prosecution argument ever against the Jewish people, the golden calf. And here on Yom Kippur, he wants to atone for us. And we know, the Pasuk says clearly, that every single Avera throughout history will always have a tinge of the golden calf. So you cannot bring the gold into the place of atonement. It doesn't work. En kategor nasa sanegor, that which was part of the prosecution, that which was part of the problem, cannot be part of the salvation. Likewise here, Rashi says, you know this principle already, I've taught it to you already, I don't have to repeat it. All I have to do is alert you to the fact that in addition to their rebellion against Hashem, which Moshe could defend, these spies rebelled against Moshe. They pushed Moshe out of their lives. They rejected Moshe. Okay? You reject Moshe, Moshe can't help you. It's very similar to the principle where a person, that Yom Kippur is mechaper, Yom Kippur can atone for everything under the sun, except the person who violates Yom Kippur. Logically. Because if Yom Kippur is what a person disrespects, how can Yom Kippur work for them? If Moshe is who the person disrespects, or in this case the group of people disrespects, they reject Moshe, how can Moshe help them? That's what Rashi wants to emphasize. Vayoshuvu, vayalinu olav. The key issue here that Rashi is tackling is not just the word vayoshuvu. Does it mean that they came a second time to complain? Or does it mean that the Torah is just repeating information? That's not the focus here. The focus is vayoshuvu, vayalinu olav. They came back in addition to their rebellion against Hashem. They came back to rebel against Moshe as well. And therefore Rashi says, Oy soma noshim vayomusu. Only they died. You see, that's his emphasis over here. Only they died. Not the rest of the nation. The rest of the nation did not attack Moshe, so Moshe could protect them. But these people, because of the fact that they specifically went against Moshe, that's why he couldn't save them, and that's why in the next pasuk you're going to see that they died, and they died immediately. That tells us this. Pasuk lamed vav is there to teach us why Moshe couldn't protect them, because they spoke against Moshe. Pasuk Lamed Zayin is there to teach us what happened to them once Moshe couldn't save them. There are two separate, distinct themes happening over here. In the one Pasuk, the Torah is teaching us an incredible principle, that if somebody pushes away and rejects a positive influence in their life, that positive influence can no longer help them. Number two, if a person misbehaves, then there's going to be consequences for that misbehavior. So pasuk number one teaches us that the spies rejected Moshe, they rebelled against Moshe, therefore he could not defend them. Pasuk number two tells us, because he couldn't defend them, therefore the punishment was that they were killed. Aye, but now hang on one second. If that's the case, if the pasuk lamed vav is there to teach us just the fact that they could not be saved by Moshe, why does that pasuk have the word lohoitzi diba in it? If you're telling me that this is the emphasis of what they did in their rebellion against Moshe, this is not the place to tell us that they spoke badly about the land. That should be in the next pasuk. The next pasuk is the pasuk where we hear why they're punished. But Lamed Vav is not the pasuk why they're punished. Lamed Vav is the pasuk that they rebelled against Moshe, therefore he couldn't defend them. So once we know that this is the pasuk emphasizing their rejection of Moshe, straight away Rashi in the same commentary has to tackle the word Diba, because now the word Diba seems out of place. See the flow? If we thought Diba was talking about how they spoke about the land, i.e. why they were punished, then it should be in a separate conversation, and actually not even in this pasuk, it should be in the next pasuk. But because Rashi has just shown us that the emphasis of our pasuk Lamed Vav is specifically their rejection of Moshe, now we have a question, why is Diba in this pasuk? To which he says, why is Diba in this pasuk? Because Diba is not always bad. Diba doesn't have to be a crime. Diba yeshna l'toy v'yeshna l'ra. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. If you want to tell me why they were punished, that's because they spoke negatively. Next pasuk. If you want to tell me why Moshe cannot help them, it's because they spoke about Moshe. Even if what they would have said about Moshe would not have been negative. Even if what they said about Moshe would have been so-called positive. In other words, not a rejection of godliness. Or rejection of Hashem's promise. Or a rejection of the land of Israel, which is all the stuff that we're going to see in the next point. It just the very fact that they felt that they had the right to speak about Moshe, that in itself shows you that they undermine Moshe's authority. You can't speak about Moshe. Look at the first Rashi in the parasha. The first Rashi in the parasha. Let's flip back for a second just to the first Rashi in the parasha, because it gives us a nice context for this. So what does Rashi say? Shlach lecha anoshim. So where does he go? The first pasuk in this week's parasha. Why does it tell us the story of the spies straight after the story of Miriam, who was afflicted with tzaras, leprosy, because she spoke badly about Moshe? Because what happened in last week's parasha? She had diba. Now Rashi's just told us, diba is not necessarily bad. Miriam wasn't speaking badly about her brother. She wasn't criticizing him in the classic sense, thinking that he was misbehaving. On the contrary, you read last week's parasha and you see that Miriam actually had a good motivation. She was concerned for her sister-in-law because her sister-in-law had become abandoned because Moshe was so caught up in his duties as a prophet. Remember, there was Eldad and Medad and they were prophesying. And Zipporah overhears it and thinks, and says, "Oy vey, I feel bad for their wives because now the husbands are going to abandon them." So Miriam, hearing that, she wants to help. It's not a bad thing. She's not looking to malign Moshe. What did Miriam do wrong? That al iske dibra shedibra be'achia. She felt she had the right to speak about her brother. That's what's wrong. It wasn't bad talk. It wasn't classic Lashon Hara. It's the fact that you don't realize who Moshe is. And Hashem proves that to us, because look at the response. He says, "You don't understand Moshe. Lo ychein avdi Moshe b'chol beisi nemanu pe'al pe'al daber b'o yomarev lo b'chidois. Umadua lo yereisem l'daber b'avdi b'moshe." Why were you not afraid to speak about Moshe? He's a unique kind of prophet. I trust him implicitly. I speak to him face to face. Nothing that he sees is in riddles. How dare you? Lama lo yereisim l'daber b'avdi b'moshe. Why were you not afraid to speak against Moshe? Not to speak badly, to speak. You can't say a word about Moshe, because if you do, then you misunderstand what Moshe is, and then Moshe can no longer help you. Let's finish that original Rashi. And these wicked spies, says Rashi, they saw what happened to Miriam and they didn't learn from it. That's what Rashi is telling and reiterating over here. Diba could be good. It doesn't have to be malicious. But if you speak about Moshe, just the fact that you feel you have the right to speak about Moshe, the fact that you feel that you have the right to comment on Moshe, the fact that you feel that you have the right to analyze Moshe, that in itself means that you don't appreciate and understand who Moshe is. And in that case, Moshe cannot help you anymore. He can't rescue you anymore, because you have demoted Moshe from his real greatness in your eyes and your perception. Incredible, eh? It's an incredible message. That the kind of awe and the kind of respect and the kind of appreciation that we have for Moshe. And don't you dare say one thing, not only negative and criticism, not even analysis to try and reduce Moshe to the understanding of our petty minds. That's why Moshe couldn't help them. What happens next once Moshe couldn't help them? Then the next pasuk comes out and says, and they spoke badly about the land. That was proper Lashon Hara. That was really malicious, and therefore they were punished. So Pasuk Lamed Vav tells us why they lost the protection of Moshe. Pasuk Lamed Zayin tells us once they lost that protection, then they were judged for their misdeed and they were punished and they died immediately. Fascinating, hey? That tells you that even though the Jewish people were so upset at that particular point in time, like we already mentioned, that was self-preservation. It was not rebellion, and therefore Moshe could save them from the most incredible thing. Says the Rebbe, what's the lesson? What's the lesson for us? The lesson for us is that yes, we could be and we have a direct line to Hashem anytime we choose. You open up a siddur, you daven to Hashem, even if it's your own words, when you daven sincerely, you have a direct line to Hashem. You could be the greatest person on earth at this point in time. Remember when the spies first went to do their job? Rashi says, they were great people. They were leaders of the tribes. That's no minor position. They were deeply spiritual people who understood things in an incredible way, but they made one misstep. What's their misstep? They didn't realize that if you don't have Moshe davening for you, if you don't appreciate that there's a Moshe Rabbeinu who stands at the top of the entire community, at the top of the entire world, and he is the one who can and should invoke mercy on your behalf. If you think for one second that you don't need Moshe in your life, if you think for one second that you can reduce the role of the Moshe, the most terrible things can happen. What happened to these spies is they started off, unfortunately, forgetting how Moshe had told them to do the job. Go find out what to do, not if you can do. They got that wrong. They came back and they said if. Then they turned around and they started to speak about Moshe as if he was not Moshe Rabbeinu. And at that point in time, he could no longer daven for them. Says the Rebbe, that teaches you an incredible lesson. The Zohar tells us that there's this pashtusa de Moshe b'chol dora, that there's a Moshe in every generation. The Medrash says it in different words, but the same theme. There's a Moshe in every generation. And we need that Moshe to daven for us. No matter how good we are, no matter how connected we are, no matter how spiritual we are, no matter how frum we are, we need that Moshe to daven for us. Because if we go completely off the rails, but we're connected to Moshe, he could save us, like he saved the Jewish people. He can intervene and bring us back on track and redirect us and reconnect us, and then we can pick up the pieces and we can go further, obviously of our own accord. Nobody comes and saves us and then we don't have to do anything. He can save us so that we can do. But if we push Moshe out, like the spies did in this Pasuk Lamed Vav, Hirimu Esa'ed Alav, if we cause questions against Moshe, then he can't daven for us. And then we're left to our own devices, and our own devices, as the spies illustrate, are actually insufficient. It's an incredibly powerful message.